Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. Hope you've had a good week. Hopefully, most of you did not watch the Grammy Award ceremony, but you probably on the news saw a clip of the satanic ritual that was involved in that. And I think we should be very concerned as a nation and as individual people when we see the elites openly trying to glorify Satan, trying to put him up. And I've known for decades that, of course, that's the elites are Luciferian. They are pedophiles. They're wicked people. But when they start putting it in our face, where they're having everyone bowing down to Satan and the flames of hell all around them, and they act like that's great, and the crowd goes wild afterward, you're like, we're entering a new stage, and it's sobering. And so this episode's going to be really especially practical and relevant today with all that going on. I'm going to be interviewing Rory Groves. He's the one that wrote the book Durable Trades. We had him on once before to talk about that book, which is excellent. But today we're going to talk about the future. Where are we heading right now with AI, artificial intelligence? And what does that mean for you and the jobs you have or would like to have in the future? If you're a young person, is it worth pursuing a college degree in an area that you know in 5 to 10 years will no longer be done by human beings? It'll be done by computers. Anyway, those are the type of things we're going to talk about with looking at the past, the time-tested and true things, not only of professions, but of family and building strong community. But then I'm going to talk to Rory about his journey of how did he transition from the high-tech world to going rural and to getting different income streams and homesteading and doing some of those types of things and a lot of the benefits to them. I think you really enjoy this. But when we see our country acting like Sodom and Gomorrah, I think if at all possible, it's a good time to go. I need to get out of this area because the fire is going to come down at some point here because they are just shaking their fist in God's face with their blasphemy, with their just reveling in evil. It's entering a whole new stage, as you know, but we need to prepare based on that. We need to get away from the wickedness as much as we can, move rural if possible. If not, God will protect you right where you are. But get a different plan for the future because we can see the future is heading in a direction that's not family friendly. It's not Christian friendly. It's not America friendly. It's not freedom friendly. And so, but anyway, I appreciate you joining me and I think you're going to really enjoy this. Rory Groves, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me back on the show. It's a huge opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you. Your book, which I've pushed before to people, but if you haven't watched one of the episodes where I pushed it, it's Durable Trades by Rory Groves. We'll give you his website and everything at the end to go get that. It's the book for today in so many ways. We're going to cover just a little bit of that, but we're going to cover some recent articles he's written on the future. Where are we going with AI that makes the durable trades even more relevant and more purposeful? And Rory, what I loved about this is you saw the world that we all see, and things are changing rapidly. And we all have acknowledged that, but kind of with our hands up in the air, oh, well. But you said, okay, yeah, it looks like everything's changing, but is there anything that's not changing? And you went and dug in and said, yeah, there is. There's a lot of things that have stayed the same because they work. They've stayed the same because they're necessary. They've stayed the same because it's the way God designed things to be. And I love that about your book because it helps you go, okay, as the future is going in the wrong direction most of the time, we need to go back to the past. And we need to see the ways that have worked for thousands of years and the ways that have not only worked as far as making money and providing for a family, but they've worked to knit the family's hearts together. They've worked to build a community because the people in the community are dependent on each other. They're not dependent on Walmart. They're dependent on their neighbor.
That's right.
And getting back to that model, and that's why I love this, but I'm going to read just one little short excerpt from your book here as kind of an intro, and then you answer according to this, where this paragraph led you then in your discovery or journey of, okay, what do we do because of this? And here's the realization he had, which I've had too, and you probably have as well. We live in a paradoxical time. As Western nations revel in unprecedented wealth and power, we are increasingly preoccupied with collapse. We closely monitor every uptick and downtick in the stock market, but ignore, this is so key, but ignore the health of social institutions that undergird our way of life. Corporately, we have specialized in every field of knowledge. Boy, isn't that the truth? Your book even talks about there's over 30,000 different specialized careers now, and there used to be about 24, and it's changed. But listen to this. So corporately, we've specialized in every field of knowledge, but individually, we lack the basic understanding to feed, clothe, and shelter ourselves. Knowledge that has been passed down through every generation except the last two or three. We are abundant with things, but racked with loneliness and starved for meaning.
Well, I knew, and I was writing this as I had been in high technology my entire career. Since I was a kid, this was all I ever wanted to do. And so these things were, you know, I was surveying, especially as a father, that really changes you. You become a husband, but then when you become a father, you start to weigh and ponder the future in a way that you didn't before. And I knew that even though I could make an income for my family, and probably reliably so, a good income, you know, there would be a job for me in this field for a long time. I knew that the bank account wasn't going to cut it when it comes to where is this all going. And just meditating on some of those things, just the over obsession, you know, on the materials, on the consumerist mindset, even to the degradation of the earth and kind of how we've been so calloused in what God has given us to steward here. Those things just began to weigh on me more and more. And then we moved to a farm 10 years ago. I mean, this was weighing on me back then, but I never really thought I'd leave my profession. But as we actually got out into the farm and started experiencing what would be a common experience for all of our ancestors, I mean, 80% of the country 200 years ago were farmers, and the rest of them were artisans, you know, were living in a farm type community. And so when I started to connect with how our great grandparents used to live, I really started to say this, hey, wait a minute, this is a much more durable way to live. I don't see the kind of cash coming in necessarily from farming, but I don't need the cash if I can grow the food and put it on my table. Right. I mean, what could be more liberating than the fact that you don't rely on interstate commerce and, you know, these fragile supply chains and these skills, in my case, in high technology, the skills that go obsolete all the time. That's the nature of the beast. So that started to put in my heart this desire to find something that was more durable and that could last, not just, you know, for a couple of years or maybe a couple of decades to fill up a 401k. What could I build that would be generational, that would be an inheritance to my children's children, right? Solomon talks about that. A good man stores up an inheritance for his children's children. Well, it's hard to do, you know, how do you do that when the government's inflating your money supply at 7% on the official statistics and 15 to 30% unofficially? It's hard to do that with bank accounts and things like that. But if you can pass on skills or a family business or something that is always going to be in demand, these are the things that are permanent and durable, and they just so happen to also be family friendly, family centered. And that's, you know, for me, that was just the home run. I could care less at that point about what, you know, how big my paychecks are. If I could do something together with my family, build those relationships, build the independence and the liberty within my own family by opting out of the larger grid, the larger, you know, world system and the global system, but just become more independent and have a healthier relationship with my own sons and daughters. That for me is worth whatever sacrifice I have to make.
That's right. No, it's, and for people that haven't read the book or heard of it before, Durable Trades, what he does is he goes into over 60 trades that with all the changes that have taken place in the last several hundred years, they haven't changed very much, over 60 of them. And as you read through it and you see the different ones, it's really inspiring. And I just, I've enjoyed it so much because it opens your eyes to a world we forgot about. We forgot about real trades that do real things. We're all taught to be paper pushers or, you know, internet stuff or just thinking of the big idea or whatever, but not doing practical things that are necessary for life to continue. All these trades have to happen or people die. And so they're not going anywhere, regardless of all the different changes. But I want to get into that for a minute. So a lot of people see that, but now we go from the past of these time-tested things to the future. I know you've been studying that a lot because it fits into your what you're doing and how you're helping train families and individuals to think outside the box. But what is the reality? Talk for a minute about just the AI. I've got one of your articles here, but just talk about how we've seen over the last decade, you know, all the different changes. Well, where is that going in the next decade or two?
This was one of the things that I was excited to talk to you about because I feel like you have a pulse on so many of the world elements that are going on right now. And to me, as a technologist, my entire career, this is one of the more alarming developments that I've seen. Which is there have been some recent breakthroughs in artificial intelligence. When we say AI, that's what we're talking about. And these are quantum leaps, I'd say, beyond what we've been used to seeing in the past. You know, people have been very gradually making improvements to computers and technology, and we've all seen that. We've seen how GPS can, you know, do navigation and how you can now pilot ships and even aircraft through the use of GPS. You have a pilot sitting there, but you don't have necessarily them touching the controls for every single maneuver. Well, it's evolved to the point now where machines are going to be thinking for us. They'll be doing the thinking for humans. And this is a new territory where we haven't seen a lot of advancements, but very recently we have started to see some of these developments come out. And there's some of these companies and labs, you know, Google is, of course, at the forefront of this field, but so is some other labs like OpenAI, comes out of Silicon Valley. Microsoft has their hand in it in a major way. And these huge companies, all the Facebook and all of these other companies, they're involved, heavily invested in the future of artificial intelligence. And the thing that's disconcerting to me about it is I talk about it a little bit in my book, but this is the kind of evolution in technology that comes after the white collar job. The vast majority of America is employed in the service sector and in the knowledge sector. You know, 70 plus, maybe 75% plus of Americans are employed in these sectors. These machines are now incredibly intelligent and they're getting smarter every day. And they passed what's called the Turing test, which is the ability to be indistinguishable from a human being. You could have a conversation with this machine, you know, via a chat bot, for example, and you wouldn't know that it's not a human on the other side of the line. That's new. That's a new threshold that we've crossed. So for me, this isn't just another bell ringing, the sky is falling, Chicken Little kind of a thing. I'm saying here, I've been watching this for 40 years. This is new. We have crossed over into something new, and there's a computing power that is very powerful here. And so I spent a number of words in the last newsletter we put out. By the way, our Grovestead newsletter is our attempt to try to speak truth to the world that we see around us and talk about homesteading and how to build a family economy. And so this was in the latest newsletter that they just went out to press. And I spent some time kind of going through what are some of the perils, what are some of the results and consequences of artificial intelligence now arriving in the way that it was once predicted. I'll give you a quote. One of the technologists, Ray Kurzweil, says that, or said formerly, that by the year 2025, one robot or one, you know, artificial intelligence machine, one computer, will have the intelligence of one human brain. By the year 2050, one computer will have the intelligence of all brains. And so we're actually right on schedule as it pertains to the intelligence of these super huge, they're building multi-billion dollar computers right now to do nothing other than think for us. And if you can follow that out to its logical conclusion, it's not looking good.
No, it's not. And it's sobering because we had an episode on Agenda Weekly in May of 2021. So I was thinking along the same lines, not knowing about your book yet, but called Rethinking College and Career. And because I saw an old Twilight Zone, someone sent me, one of the Agenda Weekly listeners sent me this old black and white Twilight Zone from the 50s called The Obsolete Man. And it was a fictitious totalitarian society in the future. And they declared if you were obsolete or not. And if you were obsolete, they executed you. And the man that was standing there for his trial was a librarian. And they said, you're obsolete. And he goes, I'll never be obsolete. And but it was so interesting because they said, we've outlawed all books. So what do you do? And he goes, just like we've outlawed God. So what do pastors do? That's why we executed all the pastors. But it was a guy again, 65 years ago, looking into the future of when they decide who has value and who doesn't have value. That's what this is really all about, people. This isn't more efficiency or making more money. It's control. It's total control. Because the reality, if you follow it to its end conclusion, you're not going to be making more money when you make everyone obsolete, because then no one will have money to buy your products. You're just having total power over you deciding who lives and who doesn't. That's the end game of this, because once computers can do everything, in the elite's eyes, man has no value whatsoever. They're a useless eater, as the communists called them, and they're polluting the planet and on and on. So that's where this goes. Now, one thing, and you can cover other parts of this, but this is one point I read in his article that is such an important point, and we forget this as Christians, and I'm going to read this here. One thing that we can be sure of, society will embrace AI with open arms. If the previous two centuries have taught us anything, it is that humans are incapable of resisting convenience. That's a key point, but then listen to this point that you made, I thought was so powerful, and we can't forget this. Ever since we exchanged the biblical understanding of work as worship with one of utility, man's adoption of technology to distance ourselves from the created order and its inconveniences has been an ever-moving tread in one direction. I read that, to me, that, Roy, that just so connected. Like, wait a minute. God wanted us to be working. He wants us to be creative. He wants us to be digging in the dirt. He wants us to be building things because he is a creator. And when they take that from us and they say, no, the computers will do it for you. I mean, the World Economic Forum tells us, oh no, we'll just give everyone a universal basic income. What are we supposed to do? Right. The suicide rates will go up 10,000% if man sits there with nothing to do because he wasn't designed to do that. And that point was so important. And you could talk more about that if you want, but the fact is God wants us to work. He's pleased when we're working. He's pleased when we're being productive because it's so valuable to him because we're imitating him when we do that. But anyway, talk Amen. About that.
Yeah. Well, we overcomplicate things, right? I mean, God put Adam in the garden to what? To tend and keep it. He put him there to take care of creation. And even that was before the fall, and that was after the fall. And that will be in the new kingdom as well. Every man under his own fig tree and under his own vine. There will be a work is part of the way that we're created as human beings. And if we disconnect ourselves, if we make entertainment or leisure or vacations, which means vacating, for vacating. If we make that the goal of our existence, to work less and less and less, we're not going to find the fulfillment that God created and put into us. We glorify God when we work. That's what Paul says. Whether you eat or drink, when you work to the glory of God. And so when we're removing that, we're removing a form of worship. It's like, let's all go to church and let's cut out the singing. We'll let, what we'll do, we'll play a tape recorder or a CD or a MP3, and we'll just let the professionals sing for us, and we'll just sit here silently and let, God be worshiped through, what would God think of that? He'd say, no, I created you to work, and I put you in my earth to take care of it. And are you taking care of it? Mm-hmm. Are you stewarding it? Look at the small family farms. These are the ones that are taking care of their animals. They're taking care of the land. They're very invested in the long-term results of this land. They're stewarding it well. Because why? Because they want to give it to their children, right? This is not just gobbled up by some giant corporate farm entity that ends up in being owned by China. This is intentional care the way that God designed it. So he wants Christian families to be engaged and to be working and to be glorifying him through their hands. We get, you know, all these things we say, hey, look, we can save so much of our time. We can become so much more efficient. We can make more money if we apply these technologies to distance ourselves, you know, to save us the pain and the, you know, the toil of all of this. You know, I'm not opposed to technology, depending on what it is and what it's for. It's not the technology itself. It's what's the motivation behind it. The motivation behind it is simply so that you can avoid doing something which God has ordained you to do. It's not going to result in, you know, the fruits of the Spirit.
The mindset I've seen in my life change, where now the whole point is to retire as early as possible so you can do nothing with the last 30 years of your life. You're like, what? I mean, that's the point. What's amazing to me, I just remembered Alexis de Tocqueville, when he came to America back in the 1830s, that was of many things he observed. He said the one of the most striking is that, unlike in Europe, where all the elites, all the super rich, they pride themselves on leisure, he said, not in America. The most industrious or the richest, the people, they feel a responsibility to society and to be productive. And I thought, isn't that back when we had more of a Christian heritage, people that were blessed with a lot, realize that's comes responsibility with that. I need to be using that to help my community and to start businesses, to hire people and do things. And, but he had noticed that difference. But today it looks like it slid, where we're just like Europe was 100 and some years ago. Sure. Where now it's leisure is the goal, to do nothing with your life. People hope, oh, I wish I win the lottery so I can just do nothing the rest of my life. That's a nightmare. That's like a prison sentence. It's so horrible.
You see that too in generational wealth, where people inherit, kids inherit the wealth of their parents, and it's they're just destroyed by it. You know, idleness used to be a sin. You know, the Puritan work ethic that this country was founded on, they would not accept idleness. You know, they followed Paul's admonition, if a man won't work, he won't eat. So, you know, that was very much part of the theological understanding of work. And the goal was not more idleness.
That's right. No, and it is so important. So what's some of the things, because of this huge advance in technology coming real soon? And like you said, it's going to be a lot of the white collar jobs. I thought of this during COVID. I would see doctors talking that I realized, yeah, they've got their medical degree, they've got everything, but they don't know as much as I do, because I took the time to listen to 15 different doctors tell me what they knew on this particular topic, and they only had the knowledge they had. So they were giving you bad advice because that's what they would have been taught. And that's right when I thought, I go, it's not going to be long until there won't be any more doctors, because you could have a computer system that had all medical knowledge in it. I mean, every study that's ever been done could be input into, so it has all information. And then you type in your symptoms and it would give you a more accurate thing if it was accurately put in there. But as opposed to a man that he only knows what he knows and he doesn't know what he doesn't know. And so, but we see that happening. And these durable tradespeople, what's so funny about this, these type, you realize, are things that would be so hard for, even with advanced technologies and computers. It's just like your thing, you said, like painting a custom paint job on the outside of a house. It's going to be a long time in the future where a robot is going to be able to do that in a way that the cost is not, you know, above what a man's ability to do that creatively and do a good job.
Yeah, so you're not going to have robots delivering babies anytime soon, right? And so midwives are going to be in a stable profession for the foreseeable future. And that's just, you know, one of them. But the thing that we have to wrap our heads around is this concept of understanding the exponential. One of the things that humans do when they look at a technology like such as artificial intelligence, and they say, yeah, but, you know, if you look over the last 100 years, there's been a lot of advance in technology. People have been put out of jobs before. That's nothing new, but they all found new jobs. But that's thinking linearly, which is what we're really good at. Humans are good at that. We're not very good at seeing exponential results and exponential consequences in this case. And when you think exponentially about this problem, you see that it's not just that there will be incremental technological changes that could maybe, you know, maybe your accounting, for example, you know, if you're an accountant, maybe your job is under pressure because a robot can do your job faster and cheaper. It's that anyone who deals with information processing, which is, 30, 40% of the workforce, can be eliminated in a very short amount of time. And I guarantee you that there are people looking ways, Microsoft is looking for ways to harness this technology to do just that now, because there are corporations that stand to benefit from this. So, some of the studies based on this that have been put out, and I these are also in the newsletter, but there's one UK study that predicts 40%, 47% of all US jobs will be automated within the next 10 years. Another study says close to 40 million Americans will need to find new jobs by 2030. So this is underway. And, when you talk about, the technological impacts to jobs, you historically, you weren't talking about the vast majority of the population, at least not over a 10-year time frame. But when you're talking about all of these college-degreed, white-collar jobs that can now be replaced by a robot, you're talking about a very acute problem that's going to happen. It's going to impact society in a very tremendous way. And so the upshot of that is that you need to start thinking now about these realities. Don't wait. You've been given grace. You have a window of time here to start to turn into a more durable path for your family, for yourself, so that when some of these things shake out, you're not as affected by these shocks to the system. We all went through the pandemic and we saw how those kinds of things shocked us. And the people who had taken the time and were more prepared for a rainy day, they were not as adversely affected by some of these things that suddenly came upon them, because they had been looking a ways off down the road. So that's one of the things in the short term is we want to watch as what are the impacts of these going to be to jobs. And what I would say too is, if you step in that direction, say you want to do something with your family, start a home-based business, you're not going to regret it. I mean, I'll just say it at the outset. Even if you only make a fraction, you're smiling because you know what I'm talking about. If you make a fraction of what you used to make, but you're home with your family and you're doing something meaningful together, I'll tell you what, you will never go back. There is no job in the world that can pay me enough to leave my family. Once you've had a taste of it, and a lot of people did during the pandemic, they had a work at home option. And that's why a lot of people, a third of the employed workforce, turned over the great, they called it the great resignation, because they said, hey, I'm not going back to that. I want something that matters. It's something. So that's the other side of the coin. It'd be one thing if you were trading a bird in the hand for, and it didn't work out, and then now you're worse off than you were before. The worst that can happen is that you spend more time with your family, you discover more new trades, new skills, and new directions, new possibilities. And you can always go back if you want to, but you probably aren't going to want to.
That's right. And just in right now, before it happens, where you have a little time, so maybe you keep that job, but you get your wife and kids, whoever, working on a separate income stream of different things, where you're starting to realize, okay, we're going to slowly build up some different things, so we're not all dependent on one thing. And we're going to try to be more productive ourselves, so we don't need as much money to live a wonderful life together. I came home, 15 years ago or so, from being in the restaurant business, which is a busy life. But I realized I need more time with my family. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was like, I don't care. I've got to come home. And so I did, and God opened the doors where I could keep working from home, making movies and doing different things. But I was right there where my kids could help me, my wife could help me. And like you said, and a lot of people, you might not understand this if you haven't done it. Because if you haven't done it, you maybe have a life where you don't have that great a relationship with your kids. So thinking of spending all day long with them every day might seem, I don't know if I could do that or not. The only reason you couldn't do that is because you haven't had that time to knit your hearts together, to connect in a way where they start to love you so much because they see that you love them because you've invested in them. And then all of a sudden, and you start to get that more eternal perspective. You realize I'm building generationally, just like these jobs. Yes. We're building these jobs so our son and our grandson and our great grandson has something to take over and build and grow and prosper in and enjoy. But that's the same with your children. Any Amen. Man that has any children at all, your influence as the decades march on should be greater and greater and greater, even after you are gone. If you've invested the time to try to knit those hearts together, teach them truth, help them to be wise, and then do things together to just enjoy what God's giving. We do not enjoy them. We have bought into the lie the world tells us. It's just like a mouth to feed and dress and pay for. That's not what God intended children to be. And you'll never know that until you start to pull them into your life where they're able to start helping you in whatever you do, even if you have a corporate job. Is there something? Can they sort your papers at home? Can they do anything to start being a part of your life in a meaningful way where they get to hear you say, thanks so much for doing that. That was really helpful. Or whatever it is where you start all of a sudden making these connections. But that's one of my, that's why we've connected so well, Rory, because just like you, that's the passion of my heart, is to get men to turn their hearts toward their families. And so they see how rich they really are.
Yeah.
What God's given you and your wife and your children is priceless.
Priceless. Amen. And I totally 100% am on board with that. And I would say, you know, that you just said it, the hearts of the fathers will turn to their children, the hearts of the children to their fathers. And I would say this to those fathers out there who are contemplating maybe a career change. I would say this, even if you'd make one step towards your children, towards being around your children more, towards investing in those relationships, your children are more likely to spend time with their children when they become fathers. Right. And when they become mothers, it's a generational bond. And we've broken down that bond in the last 100 years by separating out. The kids are separated out into age segregated daycare, public education, also known as daycare. And they're, and the mom and dad are both out of the house and they're working. They're not even together. Even the parents aren't together, you know? And so there's this complete separation of the family. And what that does is the next generation that grows up in that has, they have trouble bonding and building relationships with their own children, and they're more likely to abandon their children, or at least to have a less cohesive link that, with their children, with their sons and daughters. So if it takes one generation to pivot, to turn, you're making an impact that will last well beyond your years on this earth.
It's huge. I always tease my children, I tell them, I say, do you know why McDonald's is in business? And they're like, no. I go, you know, the food's terrible, so why are they still in business? And they go, I don't know. And I say, because they were smart enough to put a playground in the restaurant. So children that were brought there by their parents would bring their children one day. That's the only reason they're in business, because those memories are there. And so they go, my dad did this with me. I've got to do it with my children. And it's just, that was genius of them to do that. But it built the memories into the restaurant. So you're not there for the food. You're there for the sentimental attachment, because, oh, my grandpa used to take me here when I was a kid. It's that kind of connection. But you can do that in your own home, where there's a sentimental connection, where you or your kids, when they get older, they read their kids' books at night. Oh, my dad always used to read me these books. And they'll do it. I'm just telling you, whatever you do with them, if you go fishing with them, they'll be fishing addicts or restaurant. If you take them to the races, they'll be into the race cars. I've just seen so many different people I've known, and I'll see them really into something. And when I ask them questions and talk to them, dig into their life, it's what their dad did with them.
Yeah.
And I go, isn't that amazing how much power the father has to create habits? And that's why we have to be careful that we don't get into too many meaningless things. So we're getting them all into sports or whatever, but we're using that wisely.
Yeah. And by the way, I'd say one of those activities is lead your family in worship. Do that every day. Yeah. If you did that, if you just read your Bible to your children every day, think about what that would do for their futures, for their future families.
That's right.
And for your family.
Exactly. Right now, it's going to bless you. But anything that is the right thing at the right time is an eternal blessing. It lives on long after the act. And you fathers, that sounds kind of, oh, I'm not used to doing that. That's okay. Start in the book of Proverbs. Just read 5, 6, 7 verses and just slowly work your way through. And you talk about, once you've read these little nuggets of truth, you talk about how you have seen those things play out in your life or other people's life. Just the wisdom, the things you've learned in your life. And as you do that, just a little at a time, and sing a couple of hymns together, whether, and say your prayers and go to bed. You do that, it lets your kids know that's important to dad. And I bet you most of the time when it's important to dad, like we talked about, it'll be important to them when they get older, and it'll be vital for them. Because as the world, I mean, what we're talking about, as this world keeps changing, we need to be anchored into something beyond ourselves, and
Yeah.
that's eternal, that is truth, and it's what's right, because otherwise our kids are going to be confused and lost in this world, and if we haven't given them a good foundation in that.
And I'll say this also, the Bible is very clear about fathers, train your children up in the way they should go, and mothers. Your children are uniquely designed to receive discipleship from the mother and the father, but specifically, especially from the father. So dads out there, if you will just make the effort, even if the kids are not really into it, right, at first, but make the effort, make it important. And just like what Curtis shared there, that's great advice. Start simple. But your children were designed to receive mentorship and discipleship from you out of all the, not the Sunday school teacher, not the pastor or the children's pastor, not the teachers. You are the ones that God has chosen, and he's designed those children to receive that instruction from you. So it will not return void if you just make the effort.
Little things start a tradition and start knitting the hearts, and you'll want more of it, and so will they. I've seen that.
Amen.
Now, Rory, your experience and what you've done, I want to get into that a little bit because it's so interesting, because so many of us have gone, oh, we need to move out to the country. We need to have just a more simple, you know, rural life and everything, which we've did about 20 years ago too. We've so enjoyed it. This summer, as I was traveling around America, so many families came up to me and said, Curtis, we moved out to the country because you encouraged us to, and it has been the best thing that has ever happened. I can still picture some faces of these parents. They go, we are so close to our kids now. We have little chickens, and they have like 3 acres in the country. He still has his job, but he's working on spending more time, investing more. But that was fun to see. But your experience, you came there 10 years ago with all that's going on in the world. How do you do that? How do you homestead? How do you start down that road to be more independent from the big systems and more self-reliant?
I'm going to answer that question, but I want to go back to one other thing that I want to highlight from the artificial intelligence conversation.
Yes.
And it all relates into what we're going to go into, because homesteading is essential. The last thing that when I started to interact with the artificial intelligence system, and I started to ask it some, let's say, politically sensitive questions, you know, it started to spit out to me politically correct answers and refer me to the proper, you know, ministry of truth, you know, when it came to vaccine questions and things like that. So to me, it's very evident that as these machines, these thinking machines progress, these are going to consolidate sources of quote unquote truth. We're going to see the centralization, like what you said, it's going to be about control, and it will be very hard to come by actual honest truth. It's going to get harder and harder. Even today, I've told my wife that I don't think I would have been able to write durable trades today, because what I've seen in the 4 years since I originally started researching for it to today, it's a totally different internet. I mean, it is completely censored to the degree that I just can't find information. I still struggle with that. It's going to continue to consolidate as machines start to do our thinking for us. And remember, people are going to give that up. They're going to let machines think for them, because that's what humans do. We give into that convenience. And so the imperative thing and the walkaway point from that is, I don't want to leave you in a point of despair. I want to say that right now is the time to begin cultivating your sources of truth. This is a huge upshot of the article, is you need to start finding those watchmen on the wall, right? So this shows like Curtis Bowers and others who are discerning, who are doing the work to bring you the truth. You need to find out who they are. You need to use your own discernment and your own judgment, but find out who they are. And then you need to support those people. And I really, our family supports Agenda Weekly. I really think this is valuable, all the work that goes into this. We know, because we publish a newsletter, it's a tremendous amount of work. You simply would not be able to do this kind of thing. It takes, you know, weeks or months to prepare for a single show. And so you simply can't do these things if people are not financially contributing or supporting or upholding this. It's a tremendous amount of work. And then lastly, you need to pray for those watchmen too, because, you know, my wife and I were just recently talking about this. When we push something new, you know, when you're standing on that wall and trying to push some truth back in the darkness, or push some truth forward in the darkness, push the darkness back, there is a very real spiritual war that's going on. And we will feel this heaviness. And we don't know why. Where is this coming from? And then it will finally dawn on us. Oh yeah, we just released that newsletter and we were tackling some of these issues in that newsletter. And I'm sure, even though you probably don't talk about it, I'm sure that your family experiences that too. And so everyone, I would plead with you, please be praying for those people who are standing on the wall, who are, because we're putting our families on the front lines. We're exposing ourselves by speaking out. So please be praying for those families and support them. Definitely consider supporting them financially, because they're just, you're going to lose your sources for truth. Now, homesteading, which parlays into that, I say this is a great place to start. Start at home, you know, grow food, raise animals, build things, do start doing something together. These are the food, fiber, and shelter. Think about that. Food, fiber, and shelter. These are the basic human skills that everybody needs, and they're never going to go obsolete. So the more that you can invest yourself in doing things for yourself, learning these kinds of skill sets, you're going to both unplug from the larger supply chain, which is creates liberty and independence, but you're also going to come together as a family. And as individual families begin to take this responsibility, I'm not saying that dad has to quit his job. I'm saying add this in and then maybe take a part-time job. Maybe look for ways to start reducing your expenses to the point where you can free up some time and spend more time with your family, building a family-based business. So this is essential. First starting point, it starts at home. And then when you have multiple families who are doing this together, then you start to have an alternative economy. Then you have people who are truly can support each other, and you can have some kind of viable community. And that's the way that all of society used to work. I mean, we can do this again, Curtis. It's not hopeless. We have a lot there.
Yeah, everybody watching this is familiar with Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
Which was, it was that. I mean, that's just 150 years ago in America. A little town that had 10, 15 different families, and they all had different skills that complemented each other, and they all helped each other when one was down or sick or whatever. I mean, it's that little model that we all look at and go, oh, that's so attractive. And it is so attractive. Yeah, it's some hard work, but it's a lot of joy. I mean, yeah. Look at the Ingalls family, obviously is fictitious and it's not a perfect show or whatever. But I know people today, I have some cousins that were raised in single family households, and that was their idol. They go, if I could just have had a mom and a dad like that, that loved each other. And I mean, they just hold that up. And I go, well, we can do that. We can recreate that, but it's real then. It's not some Hollywood thing. But that's what Rory's talking about. That's what we're all looking at. How can we start to go down that road with real skills where we really have things we can do to contribute to the community? And looking for opportunities, because maybe you go in your community, oh, nobody does this or whatever, welding. I'm going to learn how to weld on the side, yeah. And I'm going to start doing that. I know I have a welder down the road for me. He stays so busy, he can't keep up. He's exhausted all the time. He goes, and I live in a little teeny community, but just that community provides him enough things to weld. He's busy as many hours as he wants to be. So,
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of practical things we started, and we're I love talking about this because we're not experts. Our expertise is that we're not experts. Like everything that we've learned from scratch. And I still feel like we're totally green on this. We're feeling our way through. But we started with tomato plants on an apartment balcony. But you know, we didn't have a yard. We had a balcony, and that was the very, very beginning for us of maybe 15 years ago, where we started to grow food. And we, for the first time, you know, I grew up in a suburban yard and stuff, and we had some things, but for the first time, I started to connect with this idea of actually something that God would create and flourish and I could eat it. And by the way, if you've never had homegrown tomatoes and you've only ever grown up with store-bought tomatoes, it was quite a surprise when I tasted an actual homegrown tomato.
Yeah,
but that just led to, we eventually, a couple of years after that, we moved to I had a 10th of an acre in Minneapolis proper. I mean, it was just a teeny little house and a teeny little yard. And I just started building raised beds. And just little by little, I mean, I was just learning at the beginning. There was, you know, no hope that I was going to survive off of these little raised bed gardens. But those skills, as it, I was just responsible, or I was faithful with God, with what God had given me, and he continued to open doors for me. And then we eventually moved out to the, we have a 10-acre farm now in southern Minnesota, and we have a large garden, and we have animals, we have sheep and goats and chickens, and you know, we harvest firewood for our wood stove behind me there. We keep warm in the winter from that. So we're doing progressively more and more every year. Our kids are doing it with us as they grow up. You know, a farm is a really great place to teach a work ethic to children, because there's so many ways that they can plug in from an early age. A three-year-old can go out and gather eggs. You know, you might want to send the five-year-old out with the three-year-old so that he makes it back to the house without dropping them. But there's a lot of little tasks, and they're all meaningful tasks. And it's harder when we lived in the city. You know, it was harder to have my two-year-old son at the time kind of be involved in the work I did, because I was either on a computer, or it was, you know, there were cars driving by all the time and I always had to keep an eye on them. But in a farm setting with a little bit more out in the country, if you have the opportunity, if you have the penchant to go that direction, that's been a really good move for our family. And I like that, that little by little, as they get older, they can take on more and more chores, to the point where now my oldest son, Ivor, he's doing all of the livestock chores. He does all of the feeding. He does, I mean, he lifts heavy bales around and he gets them water in the morning, and he's halter breaking some of them. And so they're learning and they love it. I mean, to them, it doesn't come across as work at all. This is just a good time. But for me as a father, I'm teaching my next generation skills that I didn't have. And that's the thing you have to remember. Every little thing that you do, even if it's planting a humble garden, you're training your children for a future to have more options with their families. And, you know, what's been on my heart lately is really exposing our children to a lot of these trades, like woodworking or machining or, you know, blacksmithing or farming or shepherding or some of these other things, but getting them skilled in a lot of these different trades that could become viable careers for them, so that when they leave the house, they have options that I didn't have when I left the house, you know, so that they are set up to be independent with their own family economies. And sometimes you might just be the intermediate generation. You might just be the ones that say, you know what, we're going to go another direction. We don't like where this waterfall is coming up over the cliff here. We're going to choose to go another route, and our children will be the beneficiaries of it. We're going to be as stepping stones, is what William Bradford said about the pilgrims. He said, if we would be as stepping stones to future generations. And can we do that as parents? Can we lay down our lives and let our children rise up, because we've seen what's coming from afar and we've helped them to take refuge and be prepared for that eventuality?
That's right. And those experiences give them confidence to try new things, to not have to go get a job for corporate America. Yeah. I've just seen the more you have that example for you, it makes you not scared to go, no, I'm going to go try to start a restaurant, or I'm going to go do this or that. Because, but other people, I've had friends, I was raised with a dad that did lots of different things, so it helped me not be fearful of the unknown. Yeah. But other people's, you know, oh, they were terrified. I go, aren't you? They had some great skills, but they were using them all for General Electric or something as an engineer. And I'm like, you've got a lot of skills there. Is there any way to pull that into an independent business where you're doing things for other companies or individuals? And that just, I saw them just become paralyzed. And I thought, wow, they're enslaved because they didn't get enough experiences to give them confidence that they could do it. They can do things. You don't have to be fearful. Today, the advantage we have, all of us, that we didn't have 20 years ago or 30 years ago when we were growing up, is the internet, as far as all the how-to videos. I mean, all these people, these just natural teachers that didn't get to teach, so they learned some trade. I love it. You go watch on YouTube or something, some guy will show you how to cut down a tree or whatever, and he makes this great video, and he's not getting paid for it or anything. I go, isn't that funny? That was that teacher in him, but he just wanted to show what he'd learned. And you watch it, and you go, wow, I know how to do that now. So there's endless videos to help you start a small garden, or to raise sheep for the first time, or what do you do with chickens? And so there's the information's there, so there's no excuse. And you have to just put the fear of the unknown to the side and go, no, I need to do this for my children. I need to, if at all possible. I know many of you of Agenda Weekly are a little bit older and you're like, I can't move out to the country, that's totally fine. You could share this video with your children and grandchildren. You can encourage young people in your church stuff to think differently. I'm going to just do it right now. I was going to do it right at the end, but this book here, I know many of you have gotten it, but Durable Trades, you need to get a copy. And here's why. You need to read it. It will be so interesting to you to learn the last 300 years, how things were done and how they're being done very similar today in 60 plus different trades. But this is the perfect gift for anyone graduating from high school, homeschool or regular school. I encourage all of you, just get one copy of this. You can read it yourself. And if you love it, get more. But if I would have gotten this, Rory, if I would have gotten this when I was 18 years old and graduated from high school, it would have totally changed my life. I didn't know all these different things like that in the hands-on nature of things that make them so enjoyable. I was like, oh, you're supposed to go to college. So I went to college for 4 years, then couldn't get a job. So then, oh, go to graduate school. And so you go, I mean, it's just, we're stuck. I was stuck in the rat race. All of my generation was, because we were taught, if you don't go to college, you'll never be anything.
Right.
And so, okay, I guess I got to go. But I didn't enjoy any of it because it was so unpractical. It was so philosophical instead of practical wisdom of this is how you do this. But this is that. This will inspire them. If nothing else, their mind will be so opened to all these practical trades that are out there that most people would not, they kind of know they're there, but they don't.
Yeah.
They've not thought about them, but when they look at, oh yeah, I guess they produce this. Oh, so someone's got to be doing that, but they don't know anybody that does a lot of these. But anyway, I encourage you to get that. What website would they go to get this, Rory?
Both the book and the newsletter, you could go to gatherandgrow.us. We have them available there.
Okay, and I'll put it on the screen there.
Great. So
gatherandgrow.us, and they have a newsletter. It's free.
Yeah.
So you need to sign up. But if you enjoy it, probably then buy some more books over time or contribute, because they've got to print it up and mail it out and everything. But it's great. I get that. My family and I get that. And it's a wonderful encouragement of other families sticking with it and slowly progressing down the road to just self-reliance and sustainability in a real way, and enjoying a life that I think God intended us to live. I mean, we're close in touch with the things that we enjoy and the things that we consume. And
yeah,
it's not all at Walmart.
And then he wants to bless us with. I mean, these things are right under our noses so many times, and we don't, you know, we're distracted by all the screens and by all the lights and all of the asphalt, I guess. But there's so much richness. You know, you have good friends of ours. We visit their farm often, and they just enjoy the beauty of God's creation so much. God has them right where he wants them because he is blessing them through the beauty of his creation, and they absolutely love it. They're busy with all kinds of different farm chores and things like that, but they truly marvel at God's goodness. And I think, you know, if they weren't there, or if they're raising their family in a city situation, they would just be missing out on all of the ways that God wants to express his goodness to us. And so these things are available for most people. We you know, not everyone's going to be able to have a farm, but most people can get their fingers dirty and work on the earth, or, you know, tend the garden, or build something with their families. There are a lot of ways, and there's a lot of options out there. And so I would encourage people to that. And that's one of the reasons why we do a newsletter. It's just a family newsletter that we started a number of years ago. Is we started inviting other families to share their stories, because there's a lot of people out there in the same boat, and they're at all different stages of their journey, but they're trying to walk towards a family-centered economy. They're trying to become more durable, and they know what's coming. We actually have a picture in the new newsletter of a map of the U.S. with red dots all over the U.S. And it's compelling because there's thousands of people that's just receiving our newsletter, all 50 states, multiple countries. And you know what? They have the same heart. They're walking the same direction. And sometimes it can feel isolating and alone. So we try to encourage. The main thing we want to do is we want to encourage the Christians who are trying to do the right thing. There's so much that you're going against in our culture right now. It's against the grain to be doing these kinds of things that we're talking about, to be trying to be family-centered when everything's trying to pull you apart, pull fathers out of the homes. So those families who are trying to move in the same direction, we're showing you other examples, ways that we've done it, ways that other families have done it, and hopefully it can encourage you and inspire you. That's the whole goal of why we do it.
And it does. I love it. And but people, we're also pushing this right now because it's not just a wise choice anymore. Things are changing. Mm-hmm. Just like you talked about with AI and stuff, things are changing. Jobs are going to be vaporizing. If your children grow up and go to college and get these degrees, they'll find out a year or two into the job, we don't need you anymore. Thank you. We've got a computer. Then they have all this debt. They don't have a job. They have no practical skills and they're in real, real trouble. And they're going to be dependent on government, which is the whole point of this thing. The first stage is to eliminate man's ability to provide for himself. So we're dependent on government. And then it gives you total control. And once they have total control, then you speak a word against them. Oh, sorry, you don't get your little income anymore. And so it silences us, which a Christian can never be silent. If he's standing in the lion's den or wherever, he cannot be. So this is just practical wisdom. And again, maybe you a little bit older, you're like, I don't know if I can start all over again. That's okay. You can start down this road to inspire children and grandchildren that are a little bit older. And just getting out, maybe your retirement years, if you can move out of the city you're in just a little bit into the country, so you still have the connection with your churches and friends, but you're out and you get some fruit trees and you grow. We just planted 40 blueberry bushes last summer. They're already huge and they're just covered in blueberries. We're out there just in solid blossoms. But where we just, you know, you start to get your hands in the dirt in an enjoyable way and you pick the first apple off your tree and a pear or whatever, and you see, man, that's how God intended us to be forever. That's why I know it's not a meaningless downgrade, because if Adam wouldn't have sinned, that's what he would still be doing.
Yes.
It's tending the garden and enjoying his family. And you know.
There's something I still don't understand what this principle is, but I'll go out. I might be having a bad day. I'll go out in the barn. I'll do the chores for the animals. Or I'll go out into the apple orchard and maybe clean off some of the dirty apples and start to prune a few things. I will come back on, it's a literal high. Like I feel so good. I don't know what happened other than I just was out there tending, you know, God's creation. And even in a small way, it does something to you. There is a spiritual significance to putting our hands to the earth in a meaningful way. And then the abundance I keep thinking about, like those, you know, those blueberry bushes, we have them too. It's our favorite thing. My wife says, everyone tear up all your spirea and plant blueberries. They're beautiful bushes and they'll provide food for you. So you could do that no matter where you are. There's so many abundant things that God wants to rain down on you. And it's kind of like we're in this cycle of, you know, my kids, I tell them when I grew up in the 80s, everything was getting bigger. You know, we were getting bigger cereal boxes. We were getting more pickles in our jars. Everything was getting bigger. And in your generation, everything is getting smaller. And we're, so it feels like, so like constricting to see everything. Our dollar isn't going as far. There's inflation all the time. And they're not even being truthful with us about that. And so you see this world that keeps saying, no, you just got to spend more. You got to work harder and you're going to get less out. It's just the way it is. You turn to God's creation and it's so abundant and it's right there. I mean, you have a sheep, it'll give birth twins, then or triplets, and you'll have 2 1 year and then you'll have 4 and then continue to do the math. Then you'll have 16 and then you'll have, you know, 32, 64, you know, in a span of 5 years, you can have a huge herd of sheep. God's principle of abundance and multiplication is all over his creation. And he provides so generously for us. We just have to go out there and be part of it.
That's right. No, I appreciate your example. I appreciate your work and study to help us understand it and to know, kind of have direction in moving that direction to be durable in the things we do. Have durable families, have durable trades, have a durable Christianity, and be a durable citizen of our country that's there through thick and thin to stand up for what is right and make a difference. But Roy, I really appreciate you joining me today.
Oh, I'm so grateful to be here. And I really encourage all of your listeners. We have a watchman on the wall right here. You need to support the Bowers family. You need to become members of the Agenda Weekly program because we're going to need sources of truth like this. And I really feel that on my heart today as I was praying about this is we have to be supporting each other. And so if you're not already a member and you're benefiting from the truth that he's been giving you, this is the day. Go ahead and sign up. Go ahead and send him your support and also tell him that you're praying for him.
Yes. Well, thank you, Roy, so much.
Amen.
I have two verses for you this week, so this will count for next week's verse as well, but it's a really good one, and it fits what we talked about today. Matthew 7:24. Wherefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. That's Jesus talking, and it's so true. We need to build our house on the rock, our business on the rock. Stick with biblical truth for everything that we're doing, regardless of what the world's doing. Their ways will fail. They always have, and they always will. But I appreciate you. Those that want to change their subscription up to a higher level, many of you ask about that. There's a little video I'm going to show right now at the end of this one to show you how to do that again. But thanks so much. And until next week, God bless you. One of the things we asked you on the survey a couple weeks ago was about the amount of support you wanted to give. And we had an overwhelming percent of you say, yes, we'd be happy to contribute a couple more dollars a month or whatever to support what you're doing, which is so wonderful. So we finally were able to work that out. And here's how you do it. If you see on the screen there, when you first come to Agenda Weekly, you go up to the top there and hit dashboard. And then once that screen opens up, you see right in the middle, your subscription. Just click on that. Then the next screen, it says edit your subscription right there in the middle. Hit that. And then over there on the right, you see it says change plan. Just click on that, and then it opens up select a new plan menu. You open up that little window, and it shows the different options available. We've got a variety of different monthly options, just like even $7, $9, and it goes up. And then we have different yearly options. Some of you like to just pay the whole thing up front each year, which is wonderful. But tap on the amount you want to support. And then once you do that, you just hit select plan and it tells you how to do that. Any amount extra, even a dollar or two, it makes a huge difference to us. A lot of people go, oh, it's $2. It just makes a big difference in what we're trying to do. So any of you that would like to do that, please consider going and just adjusting your plan to whatever amount you'd like to support us in. And those that are at the $5 amount, if that's the level you can do, that is wonderful. We are just putting those other options on there because so many of you asked to do that, which we appreciated greatly.